Support for WPR comes from the Dram Corporation, based in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Manufacturers of professional-grade handheld watering nozzles, sprinklers, and cutting tools. More information is at dramm.com.
Support for WPR comes from Doulaying the Doula, offering birth and postpartum training and certification programs for medical professionals and other interested humans. More information about training is at doulaworkshop.com.
It's 9 minutes after 6 o'clock, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine this week here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. During this hour, we're going to be talking about pet food. It's been in the news for the past week or so because of the deaths attributed to pet food that was manufactured by a company called Menu Foods and then distributed throughout the U.S. under a wide variety of brand names, including a lot of famous names that you have probably heard of. Our guests this hour say they are not surprised by the problems caused by the pet food, and they say issues within the pet food industry are more widespread than you might think. What do you think? Were you one of the many pet owners across the country who were affected by last week's recall? Or are you someone who is not only satisfied with the quality of the food that you feed your pet, you believe your pet is getting the best food and nutrition available? Either way, give us a call with your comments at 800-642-1234. Or, if you're in Madison, the number is 263-1890. You can also drop us a line by email if you can't participate by phone, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Our first guest this hour is Alka Chandra, a senior researcher for PETA, that's People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and she joins us from PETA's headquarters in Norfolk, Virginia. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Gene?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us today. First thing I want to start with is, I guess, PETA's general reaction to the recall. I have to say that, there's always food recalls for, spinach comes to mind and other things like that. But I'm not aware of recalls like this in the pet food industry before. But that doesn't mean they haven't happened.
Yes, there was a big recall of a Diamond dog food back in 2002, and it was massive. One of the reasons such recalls don't happen as much is because people often don't know whether their pet has died because or has gotten sick because of the food necessarily or something else. So in this particular instance, it was determined that it was indeed the food, and because so many pets were dying, attention was focused on what was going on. But we know when we look at where this food comes from that it is really the discards of the human food supply. So if you think about all of the meat recalls we've seen, and as you alluded to, the spinach recall and problems that we've seen across the human food supply with safety, just think about when you remove all the discards, what's not accepted as being suitable for the human food supply, that's really what's going into the pet food industry. This is a self-regulated industry. It's massively powerful. It's a $12 billion industry every year. There are 130 million Americans who keep dogs and cats in their home and are feeding them essentially, unbeknownst to them, garbage. There's what they call the four D's of the pet food supply. The parts of the American meat industry, the American meat supply, that are considered not suitable for human consumption are animals who are dead when they reach the slaughterhouse, dying, diseased animals, animals that have cancer, animals that are disabled. Many animals, when they reach American slaughterhouses, are not able to walk to slaughter. They're the downed animals, and they just collapse as they're being herded to slaughter. And those animals can't be processed into food for human beings, but they are processed into food for our dogs and cats at home. In addition to that, there's the whole rendering aspect. Pets that are at shelters and are killed, are euthanized. There are 6 to 7 million dogs and cats who are euthanized every year in American shelters, and those animals are not buried. They're sent to rendering plants, and so when those corpses are ground up and chemicals are applied to them, they're heated, and then you get something that looks like brown sugar. That's the rendered remains of all of these animals, and that's put into pet food. So our dogs and cats at home are being fed tiny quantities of euthanasia agents with every single meal. They're being fed the hormones. They're being fed the cancerous body tissue in rendered form in their food. So we're talking about really disgusting, really problematic methods of providing food for our, you know, for the companion animals whom we love, because the industry is so strong and so powerful and self-regulating.
And as I understand it, you've talked about the quality of food as being a concern of PETA. And as I understand it, PETA also has concerns about testing in regards to pet food as well.
Yes, and you know, this is the great irony of what's going on. About 4 or 5 years ago, we had an investigation inside a contract testing laboratory where we learned that IAM's pet food, which of course is one of the pet foods that's being scrutinized right now, it's under the menu foods label, IAM's food was being tested on dogs and cats. So dogs and cats were being kept in laboratory conditions in this contract testing facility. We found that these animals were being kept in cages. They were not socialized. They cowered when people would walk by because they were terrified of these humans. They were, you know, treated so poorly. The dogs were actually debarked. They had their vocal cords severed because people couldn't stand to hear them barking all the time and whining because they were lonely and terrified. The dogs actually had muscle tissue cut out of their thighs. Now, the test that they do, we have to be really clear, the test that they were doing at this contract testing facility for IAM's food were not safety tests. These were not tests to determine whether or not the food was safe. These were tests for palatability, you know, does the food taste good, and metabolism. Are the dogs and cats gaining weight when they eat their food, or are they keeping a stable weight? Is their weight going down? And basically, these tests are done for marketing purposes, so they can slap a label on the food to say better taste or, you know, good for weight gain, you know, the labels that you see, good for indoor cats. These sorts of labels are placed on there when this sort of testing is done. Now, our criticism is this sort of testing, when it's non-invasive, can be done at home. So people who have dogs and cats at home can volunteer, and they'll keep their animals at home, and then a company like IAMS could give them a year's supply of food, and then they can monitor and weigh their animals and see whether the animals like the food, that sort of thing. So these sorts of tests could have been done in a home setting, and this is what we're still pushing IAMS to do.
We're going to have to take a break here, but we'll come back to it. Alka Chandna is our guest at the moment, a senior researcher for PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. And we're discussing the pet food recall that has been taking place over the past week or so. And we'll be taking your calls in just a moment at 800-642-1234. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine. Coming up after 9, Kathleen Dunn's guest after 9 says that the beginnings of morality can be found in the behavior of primates. That's coming up after 9 this morning here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we are talking about the pet food recall that has been taking place for the past week or so. A company that manufactures many different kinds of cat and dog food, 50 different brands of dog food, 40 different brands of cat food, has recalled those brands in the past week or so. And so far, 14 pets that we know of have died as a result, and pet owners across the country are unhappy about it. We're talking with PETA, that's People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and Alka Chandna is a senior researcher for PETA, and she joins us by phone from Norfolk, Virginia. Now, before we get to calls, Alka Chandna, what would PETA like to see as a result of this, the publicity surrounding this? Do you see anything coming out of this?
Yes, we absolutely do. Well, we would like people to understand that the testing that companies like IAMS have done and continue to do actually, are not helping our animals, our companion animals. We have to do safety testing, and there are non-animal methods that can be used to do safety safety tests for the food. Right now, very small quantities of the food that go into the pet food supply are actually tested. And so we feel that these non-animal methods, there is a method called FIDO, which is the functional gastrointestinal dog model, and there are a couple of others called TIM 1 and TIM 2. These are safety tests, and we would like to see the pet food industry embrace these tests. We also think that we really need to scrutinize where this food comes from. Using the rendered remains of euthanized pets in pet food is absolutely unacceptable. We cannot allow that. It's turning our dogs and cats into cannibals, and it's offering to our companion animals, whom we love, the lowest quality food. There are hormones and antibiotics and trace euthanasia drugs that are coming into our pet food supply, and that needs to change. Now, individual consumers can make a difference right now. And if they go to helpinganimals.com, that's helpinganimals, one word, .com, they can look at a lot of resources that we have online. It's very easy to make dogs vegetarian, which means that you can just go ahead and take the food that you consume and offer that to your dog. And that way you're not giving the waste of our system to your loved animals at home. Now, cats are a bit more challenging, and so if consumers are thinking of feeding their cats more healthfully, it's very difficult to make cats vegetarian, but supplements exist on the market that are veterinarian approved, and we have resources at PETA on helpinganimals.com that people can check out.
800-642-1234 is the number that you can call if you'd like to join in the discussion. If you're calling from Madison, it is 263-1890. And don't forget, email works too, talk@wpr.org. Let's find out what listeners think. Dan joins us, and he is in New Richmond this morning. Hi, Dan.
Well, good morning. It's good to hear your voice this morning. Ma'am, I have a couple of questions. One, I'm wondering if E. coli 0157H has been proven to be lethal in dogs. Have you seen anything on that?
I'd be very surprised, Dan, if it was not lethal in dogs. We know that the great problems that particular strain of E. coli has had in humans, and so I would be surprised, but I haven't seen any particular studies. I can look into it, and then I can let Gene know, and he can let listeners.
I'm just wondering about the science. I know that it's a healthy bacteria in the lower intestine of bovines, so I just don't know how it affects dogs, because each mammal is affected differently by different strains. I'd like to tell you that, preface my comments by saying that I'm a USDA food inspector slaughter. I am on the early end of what you're describing, and I want to say that I'm not an advocate for any position here. I am charged with fulfilling the obligation put out by Congress, which is pretty firm. For over 100 years, we've inspected our meat supply to make sure that it's the safest in the world. And I need to tell you that there is no way that down and dead cattle, which arrive at our slaughterhouse, are being put into the pet food supply. The products which are put into a separate collection system for pet food have to be very rigid, and there are human beings who are inspecting every single part of that animal for wholesomeness, and we determine if it's healthy for people, and then there's a slightly substandard for animals, and then there's another standard that we throw away, which goes to rendering. And I also need to tell you that my understanding of a rendered product is that it's reduced by heat to the base components, the chemical components of a whatever that thing was that was being rendered, separated, and then used for various products, which does not include pet food. I don't believe you're telling the truth, ma'am.
Respectfully, Dan, we all know that the slaughterhouses were deregulated under Ronald Reagan, and we know that with the subsequent administrations, less and less money was given to fund inspectors. So there are very few inspectors out there right now.
Stop. Let me. Can I interject, please?
Yeah, just real quickly. We've got some more listeners who'd like to talk.
All right. Every single animal is looked at. I'm involved with the inspection of cows. Those animals are looked at by, we have five inspectors. We only kill 800 cows a day. We have five inspectors in our plant and a veterinarian full-time. That's six people. The payroll just from the federal government and the plant where I work, which is only one of thousands, is in excess of $7,000 or $8,000 a day. So you can't say the government's not putting any money in. The federal government is certainly not deregulated the meat industry. Madam, you're lying.
Okay,
and that's
Dan,
all I have to say.
Dan, thanks for the call. Elka Chen, I'll ask you to keep it quick because we do have some other folks who'd like to join in.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, you know, people can just read Fast Food Nation, for example, by Eric Schlosser and read exactly about how the slaughterhouses have been deregulated. As far as the rendering issue is concerned, scientists talk about how many of these components, like hormones, antibiotics, the euthanasia drugs, are not made inactive because of the rendering process.
Okay, let's move on and find out what other callers think. Peter joins us in Madison. Hi, Peter.
Hi there. You know, this wasn't something at all I was going to bring up, but the idea that we have the safest food system in the world is a joke. I mean, it may be very good, but we know that the number of inspectors has purposely cut back. And all you need to do, I just did a quick check on mad cow disease, and the number of inspections in Japan of animals for that is every single cow. In the United States, it's randomized. So, you know, I think all people have to do is just pay attention to the headlines in the last 3 years and how other countries look at us in disdain because of our lack of checking relative to the wealth of our country. One of the things I want to mention, I'm a director of a dog rescue, and it makes a huge difference in what you feed your dogs. And people, you know, oftentimes feed into the same propaganda about the food triangle promoted by the USDA for years and years, which, of course, with the high concentration of breads and so forth, is a component of our obesity problem today. So we have both a regulator and a promoter. And the idea that the pet food industry has been propagating all this time is that you need to look at, you know, the big conglomerates to look for your source of pet foods. And I think one of the inherent problems with any large group like CanAgra with Peter Pan peanut butter that we started seeing with a sort of a mono processing of this of our food products. In other words, there's tons of these pet foods, but all the same process, that in and of itself leads to inherent problems. And I think we should start questioning more the value of having mass production on almost anything compared to local farms, smaller niche foods like Solid Gold or Wellness or Wysong, the more premium foods that are far beyond the quality of Eukanubas and Iams, and then from there, you know, all the other mass-produced stuff that we give our dogs. And I can.
And Peter, I'm going to have to let you go because I appreciate the comments. We're almost at a break, and I do want to let our guest respond very quickly. And I'm afraid you've only got about a minute, too. But his point that the large pet foods are the only way to go is one that I've heard a lot lately. So what are people supposed to feed their pet?
Well, yeah, I think the caller made a fantastic point, first on the lack of regulation and lack of safety of our food supply, and second, on going for local, smaller suppliers. It is the larger suppliers. I mean, check out what just happened. Menu Foods is based in Ontario, Canada, and they were looking at problems that existed in some plants somewhere in the United States. I mean, there is a big disconnect, and often it takes days to try to just...
I'm afraid we're going to have to let you go. We're out of time, but I do appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you very much, Gene.
Elka Chandna, a senior researcher with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and it is 24 minutes now before 7 o'clock. We've been talking about pet food recalls for the last half hour or so, and the story prompted in part by a recall that affected 50 different brands of dog food and 40 different brands of cat food in the U.S., the food manufactured by a much larger company called Menu Foods. The recall has raised all sorts of awareness about pet foods, what is in pet foods, and whether pet foods are actually good for the pets that eat them. During the first hour, we talked with a representative from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. This hour, we talk with a spokesperson for the Animal Protection Institute. And Zibby Wilder joins us on the phone, and good morning.
Good morning, Dean. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, everyone's heard of PETA, and I have to say that before yesterday, I had never heard of the Animal Protection Institute. So tell me a few things about you.
Well, we're a national animal advocacy group based in California, and we basically advocate for animals through legislation, litigation, and public education.
Okay. Now, let's start with kind of your general reaction to this recall. There's been other recalls of pet food over the years, and this one, you know, we've been in the first part of the hour, which you probably didn't hear. We talked a lot about meatpacking plants and that sort of thing. This was due, though, to wheat gluten, which is, you know, sort of something different. But I'm still curious about your reaction to the recall in general. Is this something you're surprised by?
No, I'm not. Actually, in the 90s, there were two major recalls of foods, and those were due to mold contamination of grain ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the meat that's in them, but it's the other byproducts that are in the food. So I'm not surprised.
Now, do you, as the recall wears on, there are 14 dead animals that we know of, but many more may be out there that may have died before their owners were aware of what affected them. What sort of awareness do you hope that this issue raises among consumers?
Well, I hope it's a reminder to people that pet food is a consumer product, and just like any other consumer product, we should be very aware of what the ingredients are and what the ingredients mean, what the definitions of some of the ingredients are. Just like with foods for people, anything that's highly processed probably isn't going to be very good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times price is an indicator of the quality of food that you're getting.
Now, with food that is for human consumption, there have been all sorts of discussions over the years about what the labels say. I remember a couple of years ago, you know, if it's natural, it's this. And, you know, it went on and on and on. Do those same issues exist within the pet food industry? You know, you think of like, what am I thinking of, like fancy treats and things of that nature?
Right. They do. Pet food labeling is not very highly regulated. So it can be labeled complete and balanced if it meets standards set by the Association of American Feed Control Officials, but those standards aren't really enforced. So people need to familiarize themselves with the terms so that they know exactly what's in it. For instance, there's a lot of foods are called, say, turkey dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually holding a can in front of me that's chicken dinner and gravy. And that's called the 25% rule, which means that the ingredients must comprise at least 25% of the product, but less than 95%. So I mean, that's a big span of what that actual ingredient could be.
And the likelihood that an average consumer would know that 25% rule, I'm guessing, is fairly slim.
I didn't know it until today.
There you go. 800-642-1234 is the number you can call if you'd like to join in the discussion. In Madison, it is 263-1890. You can also join us by email at talk@wpr.org. Zibby Wilder is our guest during this half hour, a spokesperson for the Animal Protection Institute, and we're talking about the pet food recall that has been in the news for the past week or so. Now, Zibby Wilder, you tell us that price is a factor when it comes to pet food, and, you know, if you go to the store, there is that budget section, and then there are all these name brands. But as I look down the list of recalls that wears out the last week or so, a lot of those name brands are in that bunch.
Yeah, they are. I think one of the things for people to look for is, one, on the labeling, look for the label of natural rather than a name brand, because obviously a name brand, the ingredients could be just the same as a value brand.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at something that might be labeled natural, or going to a specialty store or a store that sells organic foods, is probably going to be a better indicator of the quality of the food.
And if it does say labeled natural, I mean, from what we were talking about before, does that label have any meaning?
It doesn't. But most of the times, if you are getting it from a supplier that, you know, where the other foods around it or are organic or natural, then it's a better chance that you might be getting a more quality product. Again, it's not regulated, so it's a best guess, but if you familiarize yourself with the ingredients, then that's the best you can do.
Let's find out what listeners think. Tom joins us this morning, and he is on the phone from Mequon. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I'm not sure you can answer my question, but my parents have a small dog, and he's having kidney failure right now. The only thing is that my mother has read that the dog food that's being recalled is a wet can type, and she gave him a high-quality dry kibble type. And do you know, is this affecting both types of feeders, or don't you really know?
Well, I'll let Zibby Wilder answer that, but as I understand it, it's the wet food that is the culprit here.
That's what I understand as well. But you never know. Have they taken the animal to the vet?
Oh, yes.
Oh, they have. Yeah, I don't know in that case.
Okay, well, Tom, thanks for the call. And I want to ask a question about the differences between wet and dry food, because I read that this particular recall is specifically aimed at wet food. But I guess if you think about it, there would be no reason that dry food might not fall into the same category of being recalled at some point for some reason. What are the differences between the two types of food, and is one, preferable to another?
It depends, of course, on the animal. Cats are better with wet food. Dogs might be better with dry food. It also depends on what your veterinarian recommends and the breed of your animal, the age, et cetera. So it's something people really should discuss with their veterinarian. And the difference between the two kinds of food are the way that they're processed. Canned food tends to be a little fresher because it has been canned, mm-hmm. actually, whereas dry food has a lot more, one, it has a lot more fat in it because fat is sprayed on them to act as a binding agent and also to give it flavor, but it also has quite a few more preservatives because it's made to have a longer shelf life. So they're two very, very different products.
And people need to be aware of that as well. In your work at the Animal Protection Institute, is this a topic that comes up every day, or is this a topic that comes up when there is a crisis like this? I rather suspect that most people just go to the store and get a bag of food and take it home and feed it to their pet.
Well, we have a report that's on our website called What's Really in Pet Food, and I would say it's probably one of the most popular items visited on our website.
Oh, really?
So this is something that people are concerned with all the time. It's the adage, I guess it's the same for animals. They are what they eat. And as people are becoming more familiar and caring more about the health of their companion animals, they're running into this and they're finding out that many times the food can be what's making an animal ill.
So tell me what, I didn't have the opportunity to check your website, but what are some of the concerns that people have? I mean, are there really simple questions about, is this food good for my pet? Is that the kind of the tenor of the thing?
Pretty much. Our doing the report was spurred by consumer questions about, what is in this food and what are my alternatives and how do I know? So we took some of their questions, dry food is safer than wet food, mm-hmm. and went through the facts and had a veterinarian look at everything and come up with what the reality is, which is, say dry food versus wet food, is that pet food recalls have been for all kinds of foods. So, it's very hard because there's so much information, and we tried to boil it down and answer all those questions, but there are so many questions.
Zibby Wilder is our guest this half hour, a spokesperson for the Animal Protection Institute, and we're talking about pet foods and the pet food industry in the wake of a pet food recall over the past week or so. If you'd like to join in the discussion, you can do so. We have an open line for you. The number is 800-642-1234. In Madison, it is 263-1890. We'd like to know what you think about the safety of the food that your pets are eating, or do you have some questions that you'd like to ask our guest? 800-642-1234. In Madison, it is 263-1890. 1890. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine this morning here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 12 minutes before 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine. Coming up after 10 o'clock this morning, is the American middle class worse off now than 40 years ago? Many people, Democrats and Republicans alike, say so. But not so, says Kathleen DeGun's guest after 10, and he'll be telling us why. That's coming up after 10 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we are talking about the pet food recall that has been in the news for the past week or so. And this half hour, we are talking with Zibby Wilder, a spokesperson for the Animal Protection Institute. And we've been discussing pet food, and specifically the pet food industry, something that a lot of people haven't heard about, or at least don't know very much about, I guess would be a better way to put it. And Zibby Wilder, talk a moment about the industry, because in the reading I did about it, first, a couple things struck me. First of all, it's very large, larger than I thought. And secondly, there's not a lot you really know about it, despite the size of it.
No, it's true. The industry is controlled by just a few major players, and it is a multi-billion-dollar industry, so it is very large. And for our report that we have available on our website called What's Really in Pet Food, we contacted more than 40 manufacturers of food to try and find out from them, you know, where the ingredients were coming from and other things, and not one person responded to us.
And is that, they apparently have the option not to respond to you then. I mean, because, you know, in human food, at some point, somebody has to be accountable and somebody would have to answer the mail. But in the pet food industry, those regulations aren't in place where they're not required to disclose that sort of information?
No, basically, it's an industry that's self-regulated, largely in part because this hasn't really been an issue before. I mean, the consumer demand hasn't really been there.
Mm-hmm.
But like any good company, as a consumer, if you call them up with specific questions, I think that they will be answering them. So really, this is a situation that's really in the hands of consumers, and if they demand a response and demand the information and demand changes, they'll probably get them.
800-642-1234. In Madison, it is 263-1890. Artis joins us from Delafield, and good morning, Artis.
Hi, I just wanted to run a brand by your guest to see if she'd ever heard of it. It's a food that I switched my dog to at the recommendation of someone that has a lot of dogs, and it's just done wonders for her. It's called Eagle Brand. It's a holistic natural brand that you can get at a select few pet stores. I was just wondering if you ever heard of it or if it might be tied to any of this.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. It's not on the list for the recall thus far. And I have heard of it as one of the holistic brands that's out there, but I personally don't have any experience with it.
All right, Artis, thanks for the call. And by holistic brands, Zibby Wilder, is that what you were talking about before, where a consumer might look for something labeled as natural or something that you might find at a specialty store?
Yeah. In general, these brands that are promoted to be natural, they might not be perfect, but many times they're better than most. Many of them use preservatives that are actual vitamins, like vitamin C and E, instead of chemical preservatives. And while synthetics might be present in them, the amounts will be less. So they're usually a better option.
Now, the question arises, you know, if pet food is so bad for pets, why aren't pets dying every single day? I mean, why don't we have recalls all the time on this as opposed to just every couple of years or so?
Well, I think it's a function of the industry actually being quite young. We still don't know a lot about how our animals work and what the effects of so many things on them are. You know, you look at some of the ingredients. I look at the ingredients that I see in some of these foods that I can't even pronounce. And there haven't been studies done to see what happens when you're combining all these ingredients and what ends up with these animals. I guess, for instance, there was one study that suggested that the rising incidence of hyperthyroidism in older cats was related to the amount of iodine that started showing up in canned food diets when they started making canned cat food. So I think there's a cause and effect relationship going on that really hasn't been highly studied yet.
So when you say the pet food industry is relatively new, I was just thinking about that while you were talking. I suppose that it is. I suppose that 50 years ago, cats and dogs ate table scraps or whatever their owners would feed them. And was there a highly developed pet food industry 50 or 60 years ago?
No. And actually, just an interesting aside is that kitty litter wasn't even really invented until the 1970s. So cats were probably not really indoor animals until then.
And that could have changed something as well.
Yeah.
Marilyn joins us now from Cleveland. And good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning. The articles that I've seen on the problem mention only the kinds of canned pet food that is sliced and in gravy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if that is the only kind that has been a problem, or under the brand, all kinds of the pet food is hazardous.
I don't think it's all kinds. As I understand it, it is the certain brands that are manufactured by this larger company. So you have to look for the specific brands. Zibby Wilder, am I correct in that?
That's the understanding I have as well. Any type of food listed under that specific brand.
So that would cover pet food other than just that sliced in gravy.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. And, you know, Zibby Wilder, by the tone of the calls that we are getting this morning, there is a lot of questions. There is a fair amount of confusion among consumers about what exactly it is that they're feeding their animals. And, you know, what exactly it is that they don't exactly know what's affected by this recall. And I think that is just part of the complexity that you're looking at in this industry.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's just not clear. And again, like I said, there's so much out there that people need to learn. And even what's out there isn't clear. So it's very confusing. And I think, you know, again, my advice would be just to familiarize yourselves with the terms and try and work with a veterinarian or a veterinary nutritionist to come up with a solution to this that's going to be right for you and going to be right for your animals.
Let's talk with Dan next. He joins us from Green Bay. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Good morning.
I was just commenting. You made a remark earlier about people calling the pet food, you know, industry and trying to find out just what exactly is in the pet food. And I was wondering what they're, you know, that they're probably actually more likely to do that than to say, call Oscar Mayer and say, hey, what's in my hot dogs? And I just think it's kind of a ironic situation, and I can take your comments off the air.
All right, Dan, thanks for the call. And I suppose he might be right that at some level, I think people might be more concerned about what they're feeding their pets and what they're feeding themselves sometimes, but I could be wrong on that. Zibby Wilder, what do you think about that observation?
It's a great observation. I think, as I was mentioning before, anything that's highly processed, it's interesting to find out what the actual ingredients are, and people should be just as concerned about their animals' food as they are about their own.
Now, can you trust the labels on the? We talked about the labels in terms of, you know, the descriptive nature of them before, but when you take a look at the labels on pet food and look at the ingredients, can you trust that part of the label to tell you what's what?
The labels aren't exactly clear, and the reason why is because they're not required to be. So we developed a bit of a checklist for people to work by that will help them kind of get past everything that's not clear on the labels.
So you sort of provide a translation list? Am I understanding that?
Yeah. Basically just telling people what to look for and what to avoid in very general terms.
Okay, so in general terms, what should I look for?
In general, you don't want to buy a food that contains byproduct meal or meat and bone meal, especially if that is the one and only meat ingredient. You don't know what that is. So avoiding byproduct meat byproducts is the first thing you want to do. The second thing is to look for a named meat as the first ingredient. So you want the first ingredient to be lamb or chicken instead of a generic term, just like meat.
Okay.
The other thing is to avoid formulations called light or senior or hairball formula, unless it's been specifically recommended by your veterinarian. Those are foods that might contain different acidifying agents or fibers or inadequate fats for your animal. So avoid those unless you have been directed to get them by your veterinarian. And the last thing, as I mentioned before, is in general select brands that are promoted to be natural, because they might not be perfect, but in general terms, they're better than most.
Now, before we leave at the top of the hour here, as the pet food industry, you know, takes a look at the past week or so, you've talked a bit about what you'd like to see happen. Do you think the pet food industry is going to be reevaluating anything that it does as a result of this past week?
I hope so. I think the best way that we can make sure that they do so is to call them and tell them to. You know, consumers have a wield a huge amount of power, and pet lovers especially have a huge amount of power because we love our animals. And I urge everybody who's concerned about this to do the research, educate themselves, and demand that some changes are made, and hopefully get some more restrictions on labeling and finding out what's really in this food.
Zibby Wilder, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Zibby Wilder is spokesperson for the Animal Protection Institute. Earlier in the hour, we heard from a representative from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and we've been talking about the pet food recall for the past hour here on the Ideas Network. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.